either one of these any good?
Wow, this is a good movie.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, well, the director from yesterday doesn't think so.
It stinks.
You're sorry. You waste all our film.
It's so bad.
Well, it is Oscar weekend, and welcome to it, so that's exciting. But some new movies to check out as well, as always, in the theaters and for streaming, and we are here to do just that. Thanks for joining in. She is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And we are from MadWolf.com. Let's start out on the big screen, animated adventure. After Poe is tapped to become the spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace, he needs to find and train a new dragon warrior while a wicked sorceress plans to resummon all the master villains whom Poe has vanquished to the spirit realm. This is Kung Fu Panda 4.
Who's that?
The most powerful shape-shifting sorceress, the Chameleon.
How do I find this, the Chameleon?
I'm gonna lead you right to her front door.
Yeah! It was against an army!
Then we'll just have to get an army of our own.
What is this place?
The best crooks and criminals live here.
You're a wanted criminal?
You sound surprised. Is it surprising?
Why should we help you?
We can take down the Chameleon together.
How should we do this? Quick and painless?
Yeah, 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 yeah!
Or slow and painful?
Slow and painful!
You finally met your match, Chameleon.
We're not so different, you and I.
Jack Black is a treasure. I don't think it probably matters if he's on the screen in the flesh or just as a very fun panda bear.
I know. We just last night, I was flipping channels and came across School of Rock, so I put the remote down.
As we always do. And he's, you know, he's fun in this movie. And I, you know, there was a time where I would have been like, four. But, you know, animated features have changed my tune about that.
You brought up a good point in your written review. When you look back at some of these long-term animated franchises, they've held up mm-hmm. over the years. You go all the way back. Of course, we hold the Toy Story franchise dear to our hearts. And the Hidden Dragon, not Hidden Dragon, the How to Train Your Dragon franchise is great. And this is now at number 4. And then, of course, the Puss in Boots has been good. Yeah, you're right. They've been able to hold up through multiple films.
And but the thing about this one, unlike How to Train Your Dragon or you know, even Toy Story, this is not
or Hidden Dragon.
This is not one of those movies that just transcends. You know, you're like, oh, I can't even get over how great this movie is. It isn't. It's fun. It's fine. It's enjoyable. It looks good. Jack Black is joined, as you said, by Viola Davis, Viola F. Davis. So if she wants to be in your movie, you say yes. And she's a villain, and she seems to have a lot of fun with it. You know, it's a little dialed down and sinister, but it's fun. And then Awkwafina plays his kind of sidekick in this time around, Zhen the Fox. And she does voice work for a lot of animated stuff.
Yeah, she does. Well, she's got a great voice, and she's very emotive with it.
Yeah, she does a great job as a voice actor. And so they're all fun. Not a lot of the old gang returns for this one. Most of the other, you know, your Angelina Jolie's and Seth Rogen's and the whatnots, they're out having their own adventures. But we do have Dustin Hoffman, who is, again, very disappointed in everything that Poe does. The point is that he is supposed to be finding his successor as the Dragon Warrior, and he just doesn't want to. So he goes off on this other adventure, and it turns out that this is going to teach him what he needs to learn to move on and embrace change. Mm-hmm. So it's nice. It's not great, but it's fun. It's a nice way that, you know, you're not going to be sorry you watched it.
Yeah, it's still a solid franchise. It may not be the Toy Story franchise, but that's pretty lofty heights. So, yeah, you still got some great voice talent in this. You mentioned Dustin Hoffman, Ian McShane. You know,
yeah, they did bring him back.
Yeah,
I'll listen to him talk all damn day.
Oh, exactly. And then Bryan Cranston is in this as well. So, yeah, definitely good voice work. And especially if you got the kids, you know, that love this kind of adventure. And, yeah, we're at number 4 now. It kind of, when you hear about it, it's easy to just roll your eyes. Really? Number 4? But they can still hold up a decent animated adventure for the big screen. So, yeah, check it out. And that is in the theaters starting this weekend, Kung Fu Panda 4. Well, let's stay on the big screen for a horror mystery thriller. A woman returns to her childhood home to discover that the imaginary friend she left behind is very real, and unhappy that she abandoned him. It's Blumhouse and Imaginary.
She's lost, but we're going to find her.
It was just my imagination.
Every culture has entities that tether to the young. We call them imaginary friends. You are always playing with your imaginary friend. When the connection was severed, the entity becomes enraged.
He says he's right behind you.
But it was just my imagination.
Can I hang out with your imaginary friend?
He's not imaginary. He's not your friend.
I feel like the creepy imaginary friend should be a better source material for horror movies, but I can think of about six, and none of them are good, including this one.
Right, and one of the, we talk about the red flags all the time being PG-13 horror. There are exceptions, but not too many. This one, they actually should check IDs, because if you're over 13, you should not be allowed in this movie. It's so silly. It is so dumb. It wants so badly to be Megan, and it's not even in the ballpark. I don't think it understands what made Megan so fun. And then I look at the director, and it sort of makes sense. The director is Jeff Wadlow, who also years ago did Kick-Ass 2, which had no idea why Kick-Ass was so good. That was very disappointing. This one has none of that dark humor, the wink-wink, the knowing homages, the knowing vibe that Megan did. Megan leaned into that and made it so much fun. This is just dumb and boring, and it's not scary whatsoever. Maybe if you're in junior high, you know, 13 or under, they do try to get a little action-y, a little more bloody, I guess, with a little bit of a body count in the third act. But by then, I mean, I had multiple head and hands type of moments through this thing. It's like the synopsis said, a woman, Jessica, played by DeWanda Wise, who was in The Heart of They Fall, one of the things you might know her from, goes back. She marries into a new family, a new husband, and then stepchildren, two daughters. And they move in back to her childhood home in Louisiana. And then the husband is a musician, so he goes away on tour or whatever. So she's there with her stepkids. One of them, the young girl who has this imaginary friend, and there's a teddy bear, and then that you start finding out that it's still the same imaginary friend that Jessica had and abandoned, and that imaginary friend is mad. And yeah, it's so obvious. I mean, there's so much exposition dialogue, but yet it's also so obvious what they're doing. When people come in and are introduced as good, quote unquote, good character, you know, in 5 minutes, no, you know what's going to happen here. And it's all so tired and so silly and so serious. It's so, so serious. But like you said, this sort of subject has been delved into with other horror movies. And the premise, I think, could have promise. You know, your imaginary friend, ooh, a teddy bear, creepy. But what they do with it is just so dull and boring. And they're trying to follow that bit of a Megan storyline, or at least the structure, with a toy, with a doll sort of thing. And man, it just doesn't work at all. Way too serious. Don't lean into any of the things that made that film so enjoyable. And of course, Megan did get, especially when it got a director's cut, it got bloody. It wasn't afraid to get its hands dirty. This movie doesn't even do that as well. So it's just a total, total disappointment. And that is out in theaters now, called Imaginary. Let's go to VOD on Prime this weekend. A comedy: when three childhood best friends pull a prank that goes wrong, they invent the imaginary Ricky Stenicki to get them out of trouble. 20 years later, they still use the non-existent Ricky as a handy alibi for their immature behavior. It's Ricky Stenicki.
I want you to admit that Ricky Stenicki does not exist.
Hey, Mashpulka! Stenicki!
This is Ted Summerhayes, my boss.
Ted, nice to meet you. Digging the suit and the seedlings, man.
The seedlings.
The hair plugs, they're new, right?
This is my hair. We're gonna lose our jobs.
That my best friend. She a real bad on the dance floor.
Epic night, am I right, guys?
Fuck you, she throw it out and come back in. That's my best friend.
I was really taken with your friend Stenicki. He's got brass balls on him, that guy. That's why I hired him.
That's awesome. You just said, what did you say? Just say it one more time.
We can't let him out of our sight.
Not only did I miss the birth of my son, but I let some porno Peter Frampton impersonator snip his...
And we're done.
Stanicky, you are unbelievable.
Show's over, Rod.
It's Ricky.
Ricky Stanicky isn't real.
My God, we gotta get rid of him.
Or is it Bill Brasky?
Here's to Brasky. I guess we're showing our age if you remember that hilarious clip, series of clips from Saturday Night Live and Will Ferrell years ago. Yeah, they're imaginary. The guy you never saw, but their hero, Bill Brasky. It reminded me, this movie reminded me of that idea because, yeah, you got these three friends led by Zac Efron, and they invent throughout their lives, as the synopsis said, this guy to get them out of trouble. And by now, when we catch up with them, they're all married or in relationships, and they use this guy and his backstory to get them out of things they don't want to do, like baby showers. They'd rather go to Atlantic City, and then, oh, Ricky needs us. Ricky's sick. And they have this whole book they call The Bible to keep them on task about keep their story straight about what Ricky has been doing, charity work in Nairobi, working with Bono and all these things. So they finally get to the point where they really need to put up or shut up about Ricky, and they meet this ridiculous down-and-out X-rated performer in Atlantic City played by John Cena. He does these parody songs on stage, and he changes all the lyrics to popular songs to be about masturbation. And it's kind of funny. I mean, some of them are kind of funny in very small doses. And so he keeps just telling everybody, including these guys, he's an actor. He's a trained actor. So they decide to hire him to be Ricky for this this big event that they've got going on. And it proved to everyone, because some people over the years have started to sniff out, is this guy really real? And they bring him as Ricky Stanicky. And, hilarity does not really ensue. But, you know, John Cena, and we've been saying for years, John Cena, he can carry it. He's good. He's got good charisma. And, you know, we knew from Trainwreck, he's down for pretty much anything. He's not going to shy away. And, you know, and God bless him for that. And he pulls it off. I mean, he's a good comedic actor. He's got charisma. He's got timing. Just doesn't have the material here. It has a couple of laughs. Director is Peter Farrelly. He did win his Oscar for the drama Green Book. But he's known for that sort of gross out humor. And there's definitely some of that here. Including John Cena's songs and other things. So you'll get a chuckle or two. It's too long. It's almost 2 hours long, and it doesn't need to go on that long. It's kind of a funny premise. Again, sounds like something that came out of a Saturday Night Live skit. Did they get the idea from Brasky? I don't know. But it sort of has that life of its own. You get people like William H. Macy shows up as a boss. So, you know, if you've got Prime... You know, it's there are worse ways, I guess, to spend almost 2 hours, but you're not going to laugh a whole lot. But the title's funny. It's funny to say the name Ricky Stanicky. I mean, how do they come up with that name? I don't know. But they bring him to life, courtesy of John Cena, and he pulls it off. I mean, I think he's shown that he's worthy of big screen roles. I mean, he can do it. Just get some better material, because he is a funny comedic actor. And that is on Prime now, called Ricky Stanicky. Let's go to Netflix next. An action-adventure fantasy. A dutiful damsel agrees to marry a handsome prince, only to find the royal family has recruited her as a sacrifice to repay an ancient debt. It's called Damsel.
Welcome, princess. For generations, it has been our task to protect our people. So tonight, you join a long line of women who have helped to build this kingdom. The price is dear, but so too the reward.
You better run for your life.
First thing that grabbed my attention about this, the director is Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, who directed 28 Weeks Later. Whoa.
I know. And it's funny because I thought of that a couple of times during the course of this movie. And it is, you know, on the whole, it is one of those kind of upending of fairy tale stereotypes. And but it gets dark. I was surprised. It gets dark. And in a couple of scenes, there's a real macabre beauty about what goes on here because...
And a great cast, too.
Yeah, there is a great cast. And it starts with Millie Bobby Brown. She is the damsel. And she doesn't really want to go marry this prince that she's never heard of before. But her people really, really are in dire straits. And her dad, played by Ray Winstone. I love Ray Winstone.
He's great.
And her stepmother, played by Angela Bassett. I love Angela Bassett.
Solid. Always.
So, and they kind of talk her into it. And so they travel to this kingdom that is just, it's on an island, and it's just more wealth than she's ever seen. It's just obscene wealth. Nobody can get over it. It's just so gorgeous and glorious. And the queen is played by Robin Wright. But you know immediately that she's an evil queen and that she has set up this marriage so that she can sacrifice a princess. Buttercup, is that really what you have turned to? Anyway, it's a decent setup, and there is a dragon. And if you are digging the dragons, as a general rule, I think you will like this one. Voiced by, and you'll know it the minute you hear her speak, Shora Agdashloo. She's the modern Mercedes McCambridge. She has such a great,
tremendous, probably best known for House of Sand and Fog.
Yeah,
although she's done a ton of roles, and she always cuts a great presence. And a lot of it is that voice. It's tremendous.
Oh yeah, but the film is very clever, and it does rethink a lot of what we've always sort of accepted in fairy tales. And it digs into one of the elements of some of the best fairy tales, which is that it's always the colonizer's fault and that rich people are terrible. And those are two of my favorite themes. Millie Bobby Brown does a decent job of leading this cast. Her accent, I'm curious about. But beyond that, I mean, that's kind of picking nits, really, in this kind of a film. I thought that the action was pretty great. I thought a lot of the framing was pretty great.
Mm-hmm. With the dragon?
Yeah. And it's a really good cast, kind of top to bottom. So, especially if you already have Netflix, I liked this so much better than I expected to.
Yeah, definitely. And this is, again, on Netflix, running now, called Damsel. Let's go back to Prime for a comedy. Phil's a dreamer. Most dreams don't come true. Phil hates that. But that's not going to stop Phil from dreaming. It's American Dreamer.
The house is immaculate. It's worth every penny of the asking price.
Her husband passed away years ago. They never had any children.
We live there until she croaks.
And I get the whole house.
It's almost too good to be true.
Want me to help you make the hot water colder?
You must be Astrid.
Did you hurt yourself?
I fell.
Did you break anything? Because if you break anything, you pay for it.
Well, it was nice to meet you.
She has offspring.
This is one of my kids.
I have a contested will in my future.
I'm going to sue you.
And everyone involved with you.
You exhaust me. What if she lives another 20 years?
Do you wish death upon her?
Not tomorrow. What kind of moron buys a house under such circumstances? Are you crying?
Sorry.
If that sounds like the dumbest synopsis you've ever heard.
Didn't exactly grab me.
Well, and there's no plot there. And you know what? Those sentences have no bearing whatsoever on the actual plot of this movie. And I was actually pretty excited to see this movie because it stars Peter Dinklage, who is always magnificent, really one of my favorite actors, and Shirley MacLaine. And I thought, well, that's a pairing that I can get behind. And they are kind of an odd couple. That's sort of the situation. Phil, who is a college professor, an adjunct professor, he wants to buy a house. He wants to own a home. It's the American dream. And so where some people might scroll through porn, he scrolls through, house listings. And Matt Dillon is his realtor, and you never understand why. It's like they're always together, and they clearly loathe each other. And I did. I kept waiting for some revelation, like they were brothers or something, or why do they have anything to do with each other? No, they're just always at each other's throat and constantly together. But Phil Loder finds in a classifieds ad this opportunity to, within his budget, buy this gorgeous mansion, but he just has to let the current owner live there until she dies. And the current owner is Shirley MacLaine, And as they go to buy the house, Shirley MacLaine, she looks like she's on death's doorstep. And of course, the very next day, she's no longer on death's doorstep. She's gardening. And she's quite a pip. And they, and if you know what? I think if the film had just stayed with the two of them, it might have developed into something worth watching. But even though that's really the core story is these two, we spend very, very little time with them. There are all these subplots and sort of side adventures, and nothing holds together. It's never funny. They can't decide what the tone is. They can't decide what the point is. As the synopsis alone will tell you, they don't really even know what their story is.
Yeah, and one of the writers, Theodore Melfi, did St. Vincent and Hidden Figures. So,
nominated for an Oscar for
Yeah, so a little curious. The director is Paul Dechter. Yeah, this is two in a row for Peter Dinklage. He did that She Came to Me, which was a miss a few months ago. So I agree with you. I love seeing him in just about anything. And the pairing with Shirley MacLaine, yeah, should work better than this. But it just can't decide on what it wants to work toward, I guess. And that is on Prime now, a comedy called American Dreamer. Got an Oscar nominee next. This is in select theaters and streaming. Between Light and Darkness stands Olfa, a Tunisian woman and the mother of four daughters. One day her two older daughters disappear, and this film invites professional actresses to fill in their absence. It's called Four Daughters. Yeah, this is writer-director Kather Ben-Hania. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And she's already an Oscar nominee a few years ago for an international feature called The Man Who Sold His Skin. And it's fascinating. It's one of those that mixes, you know, the docu and the drama, because as the synopsis says, her two older daughters are not in the home anymore. We don't immediately know why. The younger daughters, they can speak for themselves, but the older daughters are played by actresses. And there is another actress standing by to also sometimes play Olfa, the mother, when the storytelling gets too emotional for her and she has to step aside. So that's fascinating. And they all interact, and it's sometimes it's very, very touching, especially when the mom and the two daughters are commenting about how much the actresses remind them of the sisters that are out of the house. And most of the time it works, especially, I mean, they're talking about and cluing us into the life they lead in the very patriarchal society of Tunisia that they live in, that has gotten very much more patriarchal after a political revolution from years ago. And so we get closer and closer to the story of their heartache and why the two older daughters are missing. And it's not a hopeful, very happy story, but it's very insightful and it's very compelling. There are a couple of occasions when the device that is being used here with the stand-ins, the actresses and the real people, there are a couple of instances where it starts to blur the line a little bit and you wonder, is this exploiting? And it made me think of, you know, rightly so probably, anyone that has seen that incredible documentary from a few years ago called The Act of Killing, where these genocidal murderers acted out their crimes. And that was something where, because these killers were forced to get more intimate with what they'd done, you got some insight from that, and it was just staggering. I don't think anybody who's seen that film will ever forget it. But here you're starting with something that's intimate and then working outward. And when you, for me, just there was a few moments where you mix the two, especially when the actress that was playing the mom or standing by to play the mom, they would get into a conversation about the family choices, sort of off script. She wasn't playing the mom anymore. She was involved with the choices that they made and talking about them and debating them. And there are just a couple of moments where I thought, boy, maybe this is getting into a delicate area. But overall, it works very, very well. And if you're ready for this type of film, and I don't want to give anything away about where it leads to with the two older daughters, but it's really striking, and it really has something to say, especially from the mouths of these women who are who are living these lives in Tunisia. So well-deserved Oscar nominee. We'll see how it does on Sunday. But it's available now in select theaters and also for streaming called Four Daughters. An action comedy next in theaters. A guard on the Soviet-Chinese border who, after surviving a deadly attack, decides to become a monk but must continually prove along the way that he's capable of becoming the enlightened man he set out to be. This is called The Invisible Fight.
You're not doing damn on the closest.
Damn. Let's see my damn. Then they got my way to
get all the AI stuff.
A few years ago, director Renier Sarné made a movie called November.
Yeah.
Which we loved.
A lot different than this movie.
Very, but they're both of them, what they have in common, I think, is that they're really unique. They have quite a vision. This one is time-stamped 1973 all over the place. And also... You know, I don't know how many films you've seen that are set on the border between China and Russia or the Soviet Union, excuse me, but it's just fascinating. And the timestamp, it's such a like a pop cultural ode and really well made. I think Christy Robb reviewed this one for us. And I think the drawback is probably that the film treats women in the way that maybe films in 1973 treated women without ever kind of addressing that, as if it's still okie dokie, and that can kind of take you out of the movie a little bit, but it's a unique vision.
Yeah, and it describes itself as a comical mix of kung fu, love, and Orthodox Christianity. And if you can imagine how nutty that could become, then you have an idea. And check out Christy's full review at madwolf.com. But yeah, overall, I think she enjoyed it. And that is in select theaters now, called The Invisible Fight. Back to VOD for an action historical drama, a feature film based on the true story of the legendary Princess Kudulun of Mongolia. It's called The Warrior Princess. Well, it's called The Warrior Princess now. It was before called Princess Kudulun, so you might find it under either one of those titles. But this was reviewed at madwolf.com by Rachel Willis. And overall, she had some misgivings, but overall, she thought it was enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, it more or less does a good job, an interesting job of telling a story of one princess among 13 or 14 brothers. And when a scroll is stolen, she decides to go after it. She has always been taught not to learn how to fight, but she did anyway, and she raises an army. She goes on an adventure. So it's a fascinating historical tale, and it is, on the whole, told well.
So check out Rachel's review at madwolf.com, out now on VOD, known as either Princess Kudulun or The Warrior Princess. And one more, a drama in select theaters. 7-year-old Saul is spending the day at her grandfather's home for a surprise party for Saul's father. As daylight fades, Saul comes to understand that her world is about to change dramatically. It's called Totem.
¿Cuándo se va a acabar el mundo?
This is from writer-director Lily Aviles. And Brandon Thomas reviewed this one for us at madwolf.com and just really enjoyed it. It's an interesting kind of a film because it's told from the perspective of a 7-year-old girl. And a lot of times that could be cloying, you know, and or silly. And this one is none of those things, but it does manage to capture the wonder of a child. You as a viewer, you understand what's going on, but you recognize that she doesn't really. She doesn't understand why there are these festivities being planned, but at the same time, everybody seems quite sad. And that mixture of emotions makes the movie really very tender and touching. Brandon thought it was great.
Yeah, this is the first feature for Aviles since The Chambermaid, which you might remember in 2018. Just has done a short in between these two films. So Totem is out now. Yeah, check out Brandon's review, and very, very enjoyable and a strong recommendation for the Spanish language film called Totem. Okay, time to schlock and roll.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Yes, it is lobby time. That means it's Schlocketeer time, also known as Daniel Baldwin, hipping us to the latest studio news. What are you seeing? What are you hearing?
Well, first up, Poor Things is now available to stream on Hulu, so
woo-hoo!
Plenty of time for Oscar catch-up there.
Yay.
And Argylle is now available on premium VOD if you missed it in theaters.
And you probably did.
Yes, judging on that box office. Next week, both of these on March 12th, Ethan Coen's Driveaway Dolls and Ava DuVernay's Origin will both be hitting premium VOD.
A lot of people missed Origin, and it's a great film. I hope that gives people a chance to check it out.
It'll be the first time I'll have a chance to check it out. And then moving ahead to April, Netflix has set an April 25th premiere for their Japanese action comedy City Hunter. And IFC will release the dystopian horror satire Humane in theaters on April 26th. It is the directorial debut of Caitlin Cronenberg, daughter of David, and stars Emily Hampshire, Jay Baruchel, and Peter Gallagher.
Okay.
Very exciting.
Yay.
Three times the Cronenberg hitting theaters for us in recent years, so always a good thing.
The whole family.
Yeah. And then Netflix has set a June 14th premiere for their animated Japanese kaiju-centric superhero movie Ultraman Rising. And moving ahead to July, Netflix has set a July 3rd premiere for Beverly Hills Cop Axel F., which is Eddie Murphy's return to the titular role after 30 years. Judge Reinhold, John Ashton, Paul Reiser, and Bronson Pinchot are all back. Plus you get some Kevin Bacon. And I think this is the first time I've ever seen a sequel named after a musical cue since Axel F. is the name of his theme song.
Right, yeah. Which was also a hit at the time off the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Also, well, moving ahead into summer further, A24 is releasing Ty West's Maxine in theaters on July 5th.
Yay!
Exactly. And that's a week before Long Legs, so we're doing really well in early July this year. And Netflix has set an August 16th release for their Halle Berry and Mark Wahlberg action thriller, The Union. Excited about the Halle Berry, not so much about the Mark Wahlberg. And Amazon is releasing the Zoe Kravitz-directed thriller Blink Twice in theaters on August 23rd that stars Naomi Ackie, Channing Tatum, Gina Davis, Christian Slater, Haley Joel Osment, and Kyle MacLachlan. So,
which Kravitz?
Nice little cast. Zoe.
Okay, for a minute I thought you said Lenny Kravitz direct. I'm like, what?
Stranger things have happened.
That's true. That is true. Just want to make sure.
And then Warner Brothers has locked in a new title and a September 6th theatrical release for their Belated, which sees Michael Keaton back in the titular role as the ghost with the most. Winona Ryder is back. Catherine O'Hara is back. We also have Jenna Ortega and Monica Bellucci and Willem Dafoe.
Okay.
Yay.
Fingers crossed on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then to close things out, Disney has set a November 27th theatrical release for Moana 2. And it's been confirmed that both Dwayne Johnson and Auli Cravalho will reprise their roles in it.
Okay. Well, remember, you can always catch up on the latest online when you find The Schlocketeer on all the socials at The Schlocketeer. Daniel Baldwin, thanks as always.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Looking to head to next week, this is one I am looking very much forward to, Love Lies Bleeding.
Also, Anthony Hopkins in a based-on-true-events film, actually we just saw a few nights ago, called One Life. That's out next week.
This one looks hilarious. The American Society of Magical Negroes.
Also, Mark Wahlberg and a dog in Arthur the King.
Club Zero, a weird one. I just watched that.
One with Michael Keaton called Knox Goes Away.
Also, Snack Shack.
And The Animal Kingdom. That is all for next week. But what about this week? What do you think about the offerings? Did you love Imaginary? Okay, let's talk. Always ready to keep the conversation going about any of the films. You can find us easily on Twitter. That's at Mad Wolf, MaddWolf. Also on Facebook and Instagram. It's Mad Wolf Columbus. And the main website where you can find all of our written reviews and our other horror movie only podcast. A new episode about to drop, by the way, called Fright Club. You can find that all at madwolf.com. So enjoy the movies. Enjoy the Oscars. You can also see on the main website, you can check out our predictions. Let's see how we do this Sunday night. So enjoy those. We'll get back next week. And until then, be well. She is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And this is the Screening Room Podcast.
See ya.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner. Bye.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.